Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go ham.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Is the sports world doing enough in the aftermath of George Floyd's death, with protests and rioting sweeping across America, including here in Chicago? What should and must happen, and why have protests turned to riots?
I think these are all issues that we don't fully understand, especially the last one. I guess it's just rage. There is some organized criminality. I mean, you heard that from the mayor talking about people pulling up in a U-Haul truck and jumping out and breaking through windows. Do you go to many protests with a shovel? We talked about the idea of avoiding leadership, and that somehow some of these voices have to come from the sports world, and there are certainly plenty of people that have been standing up and saying a lot of good things. I don't know that we're turning to the right people for help if we're looking only at the sports landscape. And unfortunately, a lot of the voices of reason are coming from it.
Mully and Hall.
I get a kick out of you guys.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
We don't need sports to make the country better, but they most certainly do help. And when you have a void of leadership, when you're looking for direction and things to make people feel better, you might turn to the words of a Michael Jordan or a Doc Rivers, or to the Los Angeles Lakers or the Chicago Bulls or whoever it might be. Maybe it's Nick Saban, who finally issued a statement yesterday. But we're looking for strong examples of leadership in sports. You're looking for examples of positive race relations you can find in sports, teamwork, camaraderie, positivity, perseverance, all those things. Under ideal times, sports provide good examples that we need, and we need them now more than ever. Not that sports is something that's going to make you feel better about the way that Chicago burned on Saturday night, but eventually, at some point, it can provide some sort of solace to people, and I think they know that in the back of their minds.
Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We have been talking this morning about everything that is going on in the fine city of Chicago. We have not spent as much time talking about the world of sports, because it is certainly not the front and center story here after a rough weekend for the country and certainly the city of Chicago. And we've been kind of going over everything that's happened and getting, we will be talking to people that have been out and dealing with different things that have happened, and we'll get into more sports related stuff. But really, sure, it's not the story of the day.
No, Mully. I mean, look, it's tough to talk about, as we've been discussing. It's harder to ignore, because you want to be aware and you want to give people an outlet if they want to take advantage of that. I mean, we had a call from Ted. That was powerful. The way that he expressed himself, I think, spoke for on behalf of a lot of African-American men whose voices we haven't heard. And I think that what we can do, hopefully, is provide some sort of outlet. You know, we're not going to overstate the significance of sports. We're trying to put it into some sort of context. But after the weekend that was, there's nothing else really that no other direction you could go this morning except for to acknowledge what happened in this city, because what happened was just really unfortunate, unrecognizable, inexplicable at times and ugly, because you saw Chicago burning, you saw the looting, and there's a difference between, you know, there's a difference between, you know, protesting injustice and promoting anarchy, and we saw that over the weekend.
Yeah, no question about it. We saw a lot of things happening in relation to our town and around the country and around the world. As it turns out, there were protests in London and in Berlin and in Toronto, I guess, another place that is outside of the United States, although it seems like Toronto is just a North American city. When if you've ever visited there, it has the, you know, certain Canadian touches, but it's a different feeling and a different vibe altogether. I don't know, David, as we sit here this morning and talk about what solutions there are, I don't know that we're ever going to know, because you would think that if there was an obvious solution, it would be it would have happened already. I thought that one of the things I heard over the weekend, and it is related to our caller earlier, this idea that there are certain communities around the country that have been kind of these hotbeds of poverty for decades and decades. And if you could somehow start taking some of these federal funds that are going to building up different things in cities and put them directly into neighborhoods that have been sort of stuck in absolute poverty and kind of crushing poverty at that, you could build things up and make things nicer and help communities change without the idea that a bunch of people have to move in and change the community and turn it into some neighborhood that it no longer is.
It's acknowledging the problem. It's addressing the issue. It's being open to, you know, doing the types of things that have not been done adequately. And you're right. It's having these conversations that need to be had. And some of them are uncomfortable and uneasy, but you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable, if you will. And there's going to be obstacles in the path to progress, but that doesn't mean you go the other way or you turn around and stop. You have to continue down this path. And this all started because we're in the midst of an unbelievable confluence of events. And it's, as we pointed out earlier, it's 1918, 1929, and 1968 wrapped into one tumultuous 2020. You have all of these unbelievable forces coming together with, you see the protesters, Molly, and you see what's happening in the peaceful protesters, being police telling people to gather peacefully, and they're not social distancing, you know?
Right.
And don't you remember when the COVID-19 was our biggest concern back in the good old days of last week? And that is, you know, it just is an unbelievable time right now, because you have all these issues to address and all these problems to balance, and you're just trying to get through this one day at a time, peacefully and safe, and all those things. And you watch with respect. I did on Saturday night and Sunday night, the people who, the police officers who were preserving the peace out there under some unbelievably extreme circumstances. And, you know, frankly, the people who do what we do, you know, we relate to the news media, the reporters, the people like Phil Rogers and other reporters of his like, who are out there recording this history, documenting it, and doing the best they can as nimbly as they can, because it's very unusual, unprecedented circumstances.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, I don't know how you actually get through this sort of thing. I mean, I don't know what possibly could be a solution to these issues, because it seems as if we are desperately in need of some form of leadership or other that can help us to work our way through things. And there is a void in that area, and it is very painful to kind of to see what the reaction has been from people of power, and it hasn't been very good. Now, I don't know exactly what you're supposed to do. I don't know what I'm hoping to see, but I know that what I'm seeing isn't working. And, you know, late night anger tweets, that's all fine. Attacking your political rivals, that's all fine. But this is not, you know, you can't have somebody tearing the country apart. You can't have, you can't be threatening people in the course of this thing. You know, that there was a protest in Washington outside the White House where at one point they actually took the president and moved him into some room underground because they were so concerned for his safety in the midst of this thing. And the reaction is, you know, law and order, we're gonna go after people. I mean, the reaction is just wrong, and it's just the wrong tone all the way around. I don't know how to get past that. I don't know how people are gonna feel like they have much hope when the response is the sort of tone deafness that we've seen from the President of the United States.
I think it's okay not to know, Mully, and I think it's okay to acknowledge that we don't know, because we're looking at ourselves in the mirror collectively. And, you know, you're asking yourself these questions, you know, what can I do? How can I help? Where do I start? And that's all you can, that's the right way to look at it, if you ask me, because you've got to, there's a certain helplessness. And I think you find, you know, strength or comfort. And sometimes these, you said, you know, leadership, we're all looking for leaders. We're all looking for direction, you know, and sometimes we find it in sports. Masai Ujiri, the Raptors executive, who is among the best at what he does. And he, I thought he put this terrifically for guys like us. I mean, we're middle-aged white guys talking on a radio show. We can't relate to the plight of the African-American man who has been oppressed by, or has dealt with police brutality for years or decades or longer. And Ujiri writes, so many of you are asking, what can I do? There's a sense of helplessness, but that must not paralyze us. Your voice matters, especially when you are a leader or influential figure, and especially if you are white. Leaders have to be bold enough to state the obvious and call out racism. The conversation can no longer be avoided because it is hard. We have to have it now.
Yeah, I think that's fairly obvious. I don't argue with anything he's saying. I just think that, you know, it's great to say that, but where are these leaders, right? What are we seeing from people? You know, we don't have a unifying message. And
right.
Unfortunately, what we have is kind of, you know, divisive. And, you know, we need to be together. More than ever, we need to be together on things because we are relying upon each other to help to keep this curve where it's at, to help to keep this disease at bay. And, you know, this virus is like a very serious thing. And you're looking at people out in the streets and you're saying to yourself, like, my God, you know, this is wrong, man. You got to be careful about what the heck is going on in this country, because we're going to end up in a worse spot in terms of COVID-19 than we were when all of this started. How can that possibly be, right?
Yeah, it's just what effect will this have on the virus spreading?
That's it. Yeah. It's a real serious issue, and you got to ask about it.
And you know, I know you have three teenagers. I have a 19-year-old son, and, you know, he's around here, and you look at him, and you want, he's a picture, you know, trying to be, he's confident, and he's 19, and you know how it is. I mean, and you wonder just what they're going to remember from this weekend, what they're going to remember from this summer or this time, and how it will shape the direction they go and how they will take any lessons that they learn or things that they observe, you know, the void of leadership or the people who step forward to fill that void and the people whose words they relied upon to kind of provide some semblance of normalcy or comfort. And as parents, you do what you can, but you know that it's limited in your scope, and you just hope that they find, you know, the direction that they need. And so many of us do need at this time, because, you know, they're teenagers. And you remember back when we were teenagers and things that kind of shaped your direction. Well, we're in the midst of that now for them. And that's what it's frightening to think of it that way, and it's also reassuring as well, because at least there's an awareness how important these days and these months and this summer is, what we're going through and what we're going through together.
My daughter graduated from high school yesterday, and I got to tell you that it's just overwhelming when you you know, there's really good people trying to help and trying to send a message to all the kids as they're graduating, but The weird thing is that the message far too often has been, okay, you know, we're going to need you guys to really step up because, God, we have messed up this country. Oh, my God, have we fouled up everything that that is around you, and now it's on you guys. You know, you're the generation that really needs to be able to figure out a way to get through all these problems we've left you with. I got to tell you, I've heard 100 different speeches, and there's so many of them are expecting these kids to be able to bail us out. Like, hey, look, you know, it was our turn, and we obviously messed up. So why don't you guys do something? It's putting a lot on them. I mean,
and at what point
crazy.
Do they turn to the parents or they turn to the adults in the room? And they say, "What'd you do? What? How'd you leave us with this?
What the hell's going on here?
How do we fix it?"
It's just awful. But I got to tell you, it's like, you know, we've had a lot of really interesting conversations. The more I'm around my children, I am more hopeful for the future because they're so much more on the ball than I was at that age, and they have so many things that they have witnessed and that they are trying to get through, and they are doing a hell of a job. I mean, I'm really proud of the way that my kids have responded to some of this stuff and some of the conversations we've had and how enlightening to me they have been. It is important to be able to talk through things and to understand what is going on in the wide world. And I think my kids have as good a handle on it as I do, because I'm utterly confused. And they will ask me things, and I'll tell them, hey, listen, I talked to a guy who told me this one time, and it always stayed with me. But they got a lot of very sensible kind of understanding of things.
Congratulations to your daughter on her graduation. Congratulations to you and your wife for, you know, going through that, because that's a milestone as well. And you're right. We have to give these young people more credit than maybe we do sometimes when we're asking them to get home on time and did they do this or did they do that. They get it. They kind of understand it, and we can learn from them as much as they can learn from us. And as I said, you know, we'll get through this eventually together.
Boy, it really stinks for them, though, that we have handed them a world of problems, right? I mean, you know, we always talk about how you want, you know, better things for your kids than what you went through and all that stuff. But, I mean, what are we doing? You know, we're leaving them with, like, we're really asking a lot.
Yeah, thanks
of
a lot,
young
guys.
People. That's it. I mean, Kevin, you know, you're not a young guy. You're not. No one expects you to fix any of the society's problems. But
thanks a lot, guys.
Again, all I'm seeing is this. You know, okay, guys. Hey, listen. You know, we had our chance, and look what we did. Try to do better, and please bail us all out, will you?
You know who has good experience dealing with young people is the Paul basketball coach, Dave Lato.
Yes, we'll bring him in next, and we'll discuss it with him. It's Mully, it's Hall at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. We are delighted to welcome in Dave Lato. He joins us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Coach.
I'm doing good. Morning. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Well, we're doing fine. Thanks for jumping on. We really appreciate getting a chance to talk to you. Just obviously, we're looking at everything that is going on in the world. It's now some of the protests and rioting have gone beyond our shores, and there have been overnight, there were protests going on in London and in Berlin. And I think that it reminds us that this is, you know, while we view it as a uniquely American problem, this is a problem, an issue of inequality that's going on all over the world. And I don't know why that would comfort me, but it makes me feel better that it's not just our society, although something's broken, Coach. And I'm just curious, how do you handle this with your players?
Yeah, we spent almost 2 hours yesterday, you know, on our Zoom call. We have a weekly Zoom call, you know, just to keep updated and stay connected with one another. And, you know, aside from the normal things you would talk about, academics or what's going on in their own individual homes or communities, this took over the conversation purposely because it's so critically important. particularly for young people, to try to come to grips with their hurt, their pain, their anger, and most importantly, what to do about it. So, you know, for me, it was an opportunity to have a teachable moment with them, and continue to have one, quite honestly, because, as you mentioned, this is a really critical time that we're facing, and people are wondering, you know, what to do and how they look, you know, at a society that has been unjust, not just with police brutality, but just, you know, a very unbalanced society with people of color. And so it's something that we think is very important to our guys, and we're going to continue, as I mentioned, to talk about it over and over again.
How would you describe their collective state of mind, Coach? Because obviously you are a parent, you are a coach, but you're also an adult. You're an African-American role model who has a voice that carries, but these are young men who have yet to make their own way. So they probably get on that Zoom call. They probably, you know, leave that Zoom call and they go to back to their families, and they have these questions and they have these concerns. And how would you characterize their state of mind?
You know, it's generally speaking, they're confused, you know, and confusion comes from anger. You know, they want an explanation as to why, you know, not just why this is happening. I think that's the most critical question that goes through their minds, but why isn't something being done about it? Not just in what we saw, you know, in front of our eyes, the tragedy of George Floyd, but if you can go back historically, and why does this keep happening? Why does it keep happening? And why is there freedom to say, you know, in another month or two or three or six, it'll happen again? I think that's part of their distinct emotional state of mind, where they're angry and confused. And so we live in a society that is unbalanced. And so I can't promise them that it won't happen again. But what we can do is try to understand what to do with those emotions, how to turn a negative into a positive. You know, they're at a critical point. If you see, you know, a lot of the protests and or looting and riots, it's mainly young people. And so it affects them greatly because they have so many opinions about what's going on in this country. So, you know, we're going to try to continue to kind of put them in a better place as to how to deal with those emotions.
Coach, do you have any insight into this? And over the course of your lifetime, you've certainly seen a lot of things happen and a lot of sort of static things occur when it comes to race relations in this country. I don't understand. I have no knowledge of how this hasn't improved. And I was saying, I listened to a speech that JFK made in 1963, which would be 57 years ago, about riots in Birmingham. And you could apply the things he was saying then to right now and what's happening right now.
Well, we could talk about this for hours, and I think, you know, I have very, very distinct and strong opinions about this and many layers of it, you know, and race is a very, very, you know, critical part of our society. It's, as I mentioned, unbalanced, and it comes in so many different forms. It's been ongoing for, you know, not just, as you mentioned, in the 60s, where civil unrest was at a heightened time in this country, and you know, there were leaders trying to make things right, obviously Dr. King and people like that, but it goes back, you know, hundreds of years. And so my message, even to our players, it's I don't believe it's going anywhere. It could get better, obviously, but our racial divide is something that is at the core of this, not just this country, but you see it in all over the world. And so when I was, you know, I'm 60 years old now, but when I was a young teenager, I saw it in my neighborhood and burning down streets and early 70s and a little bit of late 60s from what I can remember. And, you know, from the standpoint of what we're talking about, police brutality, you know, you go back to 1991 with Rodney King and 92 when the verdict came out, very, very clear memories of rioting and looting over 6 days in Los Angeles. And so you can go historically into points in time and try to understand why race is at the state it is. I think, you know, across the country right now, over the last, you know, 10, 12, 15 years, it's been more distinct You know, there are a lot of reasons for that. I think there are some people, although a strong minority of people, that were not happy that America elected a president that was black. And now they have a voice, and that voice has gotten louder. But there's so many layers to this. And as I mentioned, racism comes in so many different forms. It's not just, you know, color. It's not just police brutality. It has so many educational factors, economic factors that you could go into that create a boiling sensation that we're in the middle of right now.
So, Dave, you're a coach. So you go to DePaul, you get a program, you got a plan. You say, okay, I need to do this in recruiting, and I need to do this with my roster. And it's pretty much, you know where to start. This is so different, and yet you still probably look at it from a very coachy perspective. And there has to be a plan. There has to be, you know, something that we can do, individuals can do, that feel so helpless and don't know where to start. You don't have an agenda. You don't have if I do this, if I do that. If you want to make this situation better, if somebody asks you, one of your players, one of your neighbors, one of your friends, how can I help? What do I do to start? What would you tell them?
You know, that's a very, very good question. It's a question that I asked not only myself, but I asked the players yesterday, and they didn't have answers. And what I tried to do is be, you know, very succinct about it and simplistic from their point of view. The first thing that I asked of them is to continue to educate yourself. You know, to me, education comes in two very critical forms. It's you know, going to class and do what you're supposed to do and getting good grades. But it's as part of that, it's the discipline that it takes to educate yourself, to research, to be broad-minded, all those kind of things. And then the other part of education is you know, societal, and just understanding what this world is about and how you fit in it and making sure that you can know as much about as many things as you possibly can. Be a very everyday learner about this world we live in, about people, about, you know, different things, both good, bad, or indifferent. And then, you know, we all have been given at the age of 18 the ability to vote, you know, and your voice right now is being heard loud and clear from a protesting standpoint, and unfortunately, you know, rioting and looting. And as Martin Luther King said, you know, rioting is a voice of the unheard. But to hear your voice much more clearly is the opportunity, not to, you know, just vote in November, hey, there's a presidential election, but, you know, in your community for counselors and aldermen and state senators and, you know, everything that has something to do with your life, policy-wise and otherwise. And so those are the two things that immediately come to mind that you can empower yourself to try and make a difference. You know, one person, it becomes a very, very difficult process to try to make monumental change. But if people are doing things collectively, educating themselves and talking to each other about things they agree or disagree on, and then having the power to vote, in my opinion, that's a strong way to try to move the mountain as best we can.
Coach, we're seeing, you know, the nation open up more after this stay-in-place order, after everything that's happened with COVID-19. There are no medical solutions to COVID-19. We don't even have treatment plans, let alone a vaccine. And you have to look at everything that's going on right now within that lens, where we're all kind of depending on each other to remain healthy. And then you add to it this you know, horrible thing that happened in Minneapolis. I don't think I've ever sat through a tape of something like that. When he's crying for his mother, I got to tell you, I mean, that's heartbreaking stuff. And so you understand the rage and you understand the protest, but it's also happening kind of within this global pandemic. And it's mm-hmm. You just worry for people's health. As crazy as that sounds, when so many other things are at play here.
Yeah, just imagine, is unprecedented in your lifetime, in my lifetime, or anybody's lifetime, before, during, and after, about a global pandemic and what that means. You know, I lost my mom to the disease, and so it hit very, very personally for me. And it was nothing more tragic to see people losing their lives, you know, for something that we know very little about to this day, and then get so overshadowed by this tragedy. And as you mentioned, to watch that video over the length of time that it is. Is very disheartening. It brings you to tears. It rocks you at your core. And because we're at a standstill, it is exasperated. You know, so you have that tragedy, and you go back historically and all the other, you know, things that happened, you know, in course of time. And there's things right now, whether it's in Brunswick, Georgia, or in Louisville, or you can go back to, you know, Tamir Rice or Eric Garner or Orlando Castillo or Amadou Diallo. And so if you go back in time, but this one, for the reasons why we sat and watched for that longer time, you know, the look on the police officer's face, the smug look, almost like I can do this, created, you know, a real sense of despair. And then you add on to it what we're going through. I kind of look at it as when you're driving down a highway and on the opposite side of the highway, there's a car accident. Could be fatal. You know, when the cars slow down, you see it, you feel bad about it. You may talk to somebody about it on your cell phone or whatever, but then the traffic keeps moving. And then 5 or 10 miles later, you're back on your journey. And so that's what you're concentrated on. Right now, traffic going both ways is at a standstill. So you're just looking at that tragedy. You're talking about it. And you know, between these two things that are going on, it's created a real mess. And I think social distancing and mask wearing and all those things that we were talking about 2 weeks ago has been put on a shelf a little bit because people want to be outside and protesting and sharing their anger. So now you're going to go backwards from a COVID-19 situation and have to test, you know, people that have been in close contact with each other over the last week or so, which is really, really tragic because you're going to have a spike in cases potentially, right, you know, from this tragedy. So it's really, really a difficult time for not only America, but as you mentioned, for the world to deal with something that we shouldn't be dealing with.
Sorry for your loss, Dave.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't want to, you know, make more of it than it is, but, you know, everybody, because there's over 100,000 deaths, you know, almost everybody, I'm sure you all have people that you're close to that you know who's either, you know, gotten the disease or, you know, tragically may have passed away. And so, you know, it's something that unfortunately we're dealing with. And, you know, we just have to make sure that we stay safe more than anything else and follow the guidelines of our experts and our doctors to say what is something we need to do to try to eradicate this as quickly as possible.
Coach, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks you very much. And again, it's a very important topic. I'm so glad you had me on, and the platform that all of us have, because we have a little bit of our voices, is critically important. And so I do appreciate you having me.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Coach. God bless you. That is Dave Lato, the head coach at DePaul. And, man, that's awful to hear that he lost his mom. I mean, that's just awful. I think it's awful for any man, well, anyone, to lose their mother. But to lose your mom to this disease after a lifetime.
Terrible time to you grieve with him and hear his strength in his voice and the clarity. Great perspective from Dave Lato.
All righty. 312-644-6767 is the number. We're going to talk to Ryan Baker next. We're going to bring in our friend from our television friend, David. That's how we think of Ryan. It's Mully and Haw on the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score. We are delighted that our friend Ryan Baker can take a few minutes out of his hard job on CBS News this morning to join us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline, Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Ryan.
Morning, Ryan.
Good morning. Good morning, man. Dave, Mully, how are you?
We're doing okay. We're just trying to understand what's happening in the world here, and obviously we don't have great perspective on it. You have a great perspective on it and great thoughts about it. Can you share with our listeners how you were feeling this morning and how you're feeling now?
I mean, you know, it, it's It's a mixture of emotions. Obviously, there's some anger, which has been, you know, quelling and brewing since a week ago when we first learned of the murder of George Floyd, and you saw that gut-wrenching, horrific, vile video of the officer with his knee on Floyd's neck for almost 9 minutes. And it just, again, it's like an open wound with a scab that gets ripped off. And you've seen far too many times black men, people of color, black lives being killed, murdered at the hands of police, and black lives being dehumanized and devalued. So that's one part, because, look, I have a mirror in my house everywhere I go. I'm a black man. I mean, regardless of being a news anchor, former sports guy, in television news, whatever, at the end of the day, in the beginning of the day, I'm a black man, so it's going to hit me different. So there's a range of emotions that come there. But then you want to maintain your objectivity, tell the story. I mean, I had a job to do starting at 4:30 this morning to not only, I mean, all week we've talked about the George Floyd murder, but the aftermath of the protests turned violent in the city and surrounding areas being ripped apart. So it's difficult, and we have to own that because we're still human.
Ryan, your Instagram post was powerful this morning, trying to summarize your emotions as you went to work and went on the air over the weekend. How did you harness that emotion and get ready for, you know, to going to work? Because you do have a responsibility to be objective, and yet you also have a platform that you feel like that is important as well. And how difficult was that challenge?
I mean, David, I was certainly conflicted because as you mentioned, I mean, I'm not, when I speak, I believe I'm representing myself, but there's always going to be CBS 2 or CBS Chicago attached to that. And, you know, in this social media world, we're flooded with opinion and editorial and conjecture. So I wanted to kind of collect my thoughts and make sure I was in the right space. I thank God for my family every day and keeping them close, so that certainly helped. And I kind of, you know, I just kind of reached the point this morning. I had to say that it was weighing heavily, or I felt like I couldn't really do my job effectively if I didn't really say, hey, this is where my headspace is. This is how I'm feeling. Let's be honest and open because, yeah, my job is to be fair and objective, but it's also to report reality. And this is reality. This is real. This is happening in real time for all of us. And it didn't just happen overnight. You know, we don't have time to go into a history lesson here, but I think it goes without saying that there's precedent for what we witnessed with George Floyd and the aftermath. And guess what? It's going to be ugly when you rip open that wound and that sore, and all the poison comes seeping out. And it's not going to be something that, you know, a nice, pretty situation where you just protest and hold hands and that's it. There's a lot of pain, a lot of hurt. As Martin Luther King Jr. said, riot is the voice of the unheard. And certainly that's been the case these past few days. But there's also been a lot of opportunistic cowards and criminals who've taken advantage of this moment mm-hmm. for their own personal purposes, and that's inexcusable.
Yeah, I agree with everything you've said. I think that, Ryan, what confuses me is what if you actually just look at, you know, we're roughly the same age. If you look, we've talked about the same basketball players that we watched when they were younger.
Oh, sure, sure.
I got to tell you, I don't understand why this hasn't changed at all in our lifetime. The difference seems to be that there are now people with the cameras on their phones that can take pictures or take video.
Will Smith said it best. Racism isn't new. It's just now being recorded. Okay, so that is what's happening in this social media world. I mean, and one of the things that really just threw me and was so jarring to me is that video is ingrained in my mind of George Floyd pleading and grasping for air and pleading for his life, is the officer knew he was being recorded. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is recorded now. And just that moment, as the cameras are around and Chauvin and the officers around know they're being recorded, but that brazenly above the law. So that speaks volumes. So you and it's, again, if you're black, if you're African-American, it's going to hit you different. I mean, we're just weeks away from
Ahmaud Arbery, that being
right.
exposed. So, I mean, and there were so many other instances. I mean, people haven't fully recovered from Trayvon Martin, and the list goes on. So to answer your question, Mully, as to why, we don't have enough time to, and we do an entire show on that, but it's about listening. It's about recognizing, empathizing. It's so many levels and layers to this, but I will say I appreciate you all for having me on just to get it out there, because obviously, you know, sports has taken a backseat with coronavirus and COVID, and now this has created a whole nother level of angst for the country to deal with. So it starts with communication, and listening is a big part of that.
Quickly, before we let you go, we know we have to get back on the air, but Ryan, you're an optimistic guy. Do you think that it has to get worse before it gets better, or are we on the road back?
Well, I don't know how much worse it can get, number one. I don't know how much worse it can get other than the origins of this country. And again, not to turn it upside down, but the facts are the facts. I mean, this is a country that was, you know, rooted and grounded in violence, in slavery, in inhumane behavior and laws. So, you know, the tentacles of that run very deep. So, but I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful. Absolutely. Listen, it's about equality. I have an interracial marriage. My kids are blended. So that should be the America where I want to have the freedom and the liberty to pursue happiness in any way that you see fit and not be marginalized or dehumanized. And look, I've had a wonderful life and career as a journalist. Going to University of Illinois changed my life. But I've worked very hard, taking advantage of opportunities. But I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the people who lost their lives. You know, as my parents grew up in the civil rights movement. Mully, you mentioned I'm born in 1969, so ushered in that transition into the 70s. And here we are in 2020. Feeling in many ways we haven't made any progress. So it's heart-wrenching, it's depressing, but yes, I do have hope that things will get better, and I believe they will. And it unfortunately takes a flashpoint, a negative and ugly flashpoint like this to reignite the conversation to get us eventually where we need to go, and I believe it'll happen.
Ryan, thanks so much for jumping on. We really appreciate it. We know you're very busy, and God bless you and yours.
Thanks, Brian.
Same to you. I appreciate care. You guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
That is Ryan Baker.
Well put.
Well, the thing that comes back to me is now Ryan has got to talk. He's talked about his children. Now he's got to talk to his children about how you go out in the world and what you're going to face and how you're going to put up with that and what you're going to. I mean, these are conversations, David, that I've not had with my children, that you haven't had to have with your son. I mean, you know, you talk to the kids about, hey, you know, what's expected of you, how you have to behave toward people. You try to give your children the same value system that you have and that was instilled in you. But you don't have to tell them that, here's how you behave if you're pulled over by a police officer because you're in the wrong neighborhood or whatever it might be.
Well, we've never had to deal with preparing our children for racism. And I think that is the distinction that he made. And, you know, Ryan Baker is an optimistic guy, and he sort of lives his life out loud. You know, he's very open on social media, and you know about his family because he lets you into his family. And so he's very open about the challenges that he will confront as his children grow up. And I think that's the first step, though, Mully, because if you deny that, if you don't acknowledge that, then it's even becomes a bigger challenge. So, you know, hearing from him and hearing the hope that he has without having any illusions, that should make people a little bit optimistic. He has a good sense of what's ahead, and that's why it's valuable to hear from a guy like that.
No doubt about it. All right. 312-644-6767. You're listening to Mully and Haw on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.